Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today. Hello, listener, and welcome along to episode 14 of the podcast. Today, we're discussing the Chinese free trade zones. So what are they? What are the benefits to you if you're importing from China? And we'll look a little bit more closely at the Pingshan-Shenzhen China Free Trade Zone, where Sofeast have just opened up a new RMA packing and fulfillment facility.
Hello, Renaud.
Hey, hi, Adrian. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks. You?
Yeah, good.
Great. Today, I want to talk about something a little bit different. You've recently opened up a facility in Shenzhen's free trade zone, and Sofeast has the main office in Shenzhen, of course, but this is a different facility altogether. So I want to understand, what is it about the free trade zone that caused you to open up the facility there, and what are the benefits of this zone in comparison to perhaps another area of Shenzhen or somewhere else in China?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's let's unpack this maybe one layer at a time. So close to the main port of Shenzhen, close to the Yantian port, there is an area, a very specifically delineated area, that is called the free trade zone, and then there's a number of buildings there, mostly warehouses and repacking workshops and so on. And to be fair, I'm not really sure what all of these buildings do. Just see them from the outside. But it's pretty busy. There's a lot of activity there. So in China, they actually, since they created Shenzhen itself, and the Shenzhen Special Economic Zone, they've always been trying new things, right? Shenzhen was the guinea pig of the new and open China, right? And we know what it has become. It's just an enormous success in economic terms. So they keep doing things here and there. there's some special zones. There's another huge one in Shenzhen, actually, to the west, just south of the airport, somewhere between the airport and the back of Nanshan district. It's Chenhai Bay in English, and they're developing it. There's been an enormous amount of investment there already, and this is going to be a new central business district, plus some apartment buildings, plus some shopping malls and so on, plus to the south, logistics services, warehousing and shipping services. So it's a huge area in Chenhaiwan. The people have been talking also a lot about a new special zone in Shanghai and so on. And different these special zones typically come with less paperwork. Okay, so for example, in Shenhaiwan, in Shenzhen, it's possible to set up new companies faster, and faster and with less paperwork. So actually, there's a lot of companies that get set up there, but their real office is in Futian and Luohu in another district. So this is the special zones. China likes to make these zones. Then the concept of the free trade zone is not just in China, right? In my understanding, there's some in some other Southeast Asian countries where they say, okay, you can get all of the materials you want to come from the outside is fine. You assemble stuff there, you pack it, and you re-export it. It's fine. It's like it's never coming to our country. This is basically the fundamental logic of a free trade zone that is close to a major port, all right?
Sure.
especially in some Southeast Asian countries where they don't have many components and materials on site. They have to import a lot of things to assemble relatively complicated product. But it also makes sense in some cases in China, even though you can find a lot of things right in China, but not everything. I'll go over that. That was sort of my introduction of what's a free trade zone. Just means that you can bring some products there from the outside, from Vietnam, from the USA, from Germany, wherever, and you can arrive there without actually arriving in China, right? It's still considered sort of outside China. And if after that you don't bring it into China out of the free trade zone, you never have to actually declare the import, and you don't have to pay import duties and to go through all the paperwork that entails. And China is known for having a certain number of papers to fill and processes to follow and everything, right?
Absolutely.
So when does it make sense? So there's several ways it can be useful. Occasionally, and everybody will say, yes, true, it happens. Occasionally, you receive a bad batch of product from China. And if you are, in Los Angeles, you can find a corrections or a quality rework facility, right? That exists there. If it arrives somewhere in also on the port in the East Coast, you can find something like that. Maybe you have to put it on a truck. Maybe you have to bring it to Nevada out of California because it's a bit expensive there and things like that. But you can find these kind of facilities. Obviously, you're paying the labor cost of the U.S., not of China. But the good thing is it can be done relatively fast if they're not already busy with some other things. In some other countries, it's not as common. And it's very often around textile, but not really hard goods. So there's a lot of buyers that get stuck with a shipment that actually could be reworked, and they don't know what to do, because if you just send it back to China, in theory, on paper, it's actually forbidden, because these are defective products. China does not want to import defective products, just like it does not want to get all of the world's scrap materials, right? There are ways to do it, but it's relatively complicated, okay? I'm not saying it's impossible. It's relatively complicated. If you want to do everything by the rule, it's relatively complicated. And you have to re-import it. You have to pay for these import duties and everything. And then you have to declare that you export it again. So, it's just a lot of extra paperwork and extra time that you waste in the process. However, if you bring it to the to a facility in the free trade zone, free trade zone like the one in Shenzhen, you don't have to worry about all this because it's still considered sort of offshore. It's not inside China, so you don't have to do all the work. So in this case, what do we actually do? Well, we can use some of our staff to do actually, the sorting. Okay, yeah, right, 60% is bad, 40% is good, and then the bad stuff, maybe categorize it, very bad, maybe cannot be reworked. And then the bad that can be reworked, and then, do the reworking. Now, sometimes it's simple assembly or with, relatively simple tools. Sometimes we need the supplier to bring us some very specific tools. And usually the supplier is required to pay for some of that or all of that, right? So they actually can come and see how we're doing the inspection, to sort the bad and the good, so that they don't feel that they're being taken for a ride, right? Because if you receive the products and you say, according to my inspection, 80% of the products are bad, and it takes us 30 minutes to fix every unit, which at the cost of $11 an hour, blah, blah, blah. You know, the Chinese suppliers don't like that at all.
Of course.
However, if it's in Shenzhen and they can come and actually see how the work is done and how, you know, how we inspect what is good and bad and so on, gives them some extra confidence. And if they feel it's fair, they will usually not try to dispute that. And it's usually much easier for the buyer to reinvoice some of the work. It's also possible to have some of the supplier's staff actually come and do the highly specialized rework, because there's all kinds of products, all kinds of operations that are needed to do the repair. Sometimes it's really, really not easy, right? So, and maybe we don't want to take the responsibility to do this kind of work also. So they can send some people to actually do the work or help us do some of the work, right? Then we inspect again. Some of it might have to be reworked again or scrapped or whatnot. Then it's packed and then we ship again, right? So all of this can be done under the same roof. When it's shipped again, since it was never actually imported into China, onto the Chinese soil, it just goes out and there's no extra paperwork, right? Which is, minimal extra paperwork, which is great. So that's one thing. And actually we've been looking for repair services for some of our clients in the past, you know, in Shenzhen, and it's actually pretty hard to find. So that's a nice plus for some of our clients. The other thing is when the suppliers bring their materials, you know, their boxes of products, let's say, to our facility in the free trade zone, for them it's like the export. Whatever happens after is sort of after exporting. So for them, this is relatively simple. You just bring it there. Okay, I brought it to the free trade zone. I can start to process the application for the VAT rebate. I can do this, do that. It's like I've exported already. Done. I can request to be paid by the customer. You know, that's it. End of story. I can turn the page. This is much better than asking them, hey, you've made 200 cartons. Well, send us 100 cartons to the USA, send 20 cartons to Australia, and then the rest, please wait. We're not sure yet what to do. What do you mean, wait? We've done it. You know, you let us ship it out and, of course, pay us, right? And hey, our warehouse is getting full. And hey, we can keep it in the warehouse, but then, you know, there's no humidity control and all the boxes become wet and soft and it's terrible, especially like in this season, right? And the longer it stays in the warehouse, the longer you're taking risks actually, because these people don't have insurance. Most of the time they don't have insurance against fire and things like that, right? So that's another thing. It gives more flexibility, especially to these customers that need to ship batches of products to different countries, or maybe, you know, West Coast, East Coast, and so on, to different ports. They have more flexibility. It does not really make sense for drop shipping, you know, one at a time or five at a time. It doesn't really make sense. For clients who need that, we do it out of Dongguan. It makes more sense. However, for batches of a certain size that have to be sent, you know, maybe half of it already has to be sent right away. The rest has to be kept in warehouse. And then over time, as sales trickle in and the sales forecast trickle in, then arrange for shipments to different countries. That is a good model. That makes sense, and it make things much easier with the suppliers.
You mentioned, of course, there are benefits to your supplier. So overall, if you're able to finish the project with the supplier very quickly, they're able to apply for their VAT rebates and to apply for you to pay them in full, of course, they're going to be happy. So, I mean, is this something that perhaps is good for improving relationships with suppliers moving forward and therefore getting better results?
If you have the kind of need that I described before, yes. You know, obviously, you make things easier for them. They get paid earlier, they're happy. By the way, it's for some clients, we also combine this with another way of working with suppliers. If you are a company in wherever, Russia, Denmark, Canada, Chinese suppliers have a limited amount of trust, let's say, because, hey, as an importer, of course, you can be taken for a ride, but as a manufacturer and exporter, they can also be taken for a ride. They have to be careful, right? Hence their resistance sometimes to shipping the goods before getting paid, but how can I make sure I will get paid and these kind of things, right? When they get cheated by a customer, usually they lose all of the value of a shipment. It's a huge amount of money, right? So it's pretty normal for them to seek some reassurance, right? And not extend long credit terms and open account, ship the goods and then pay me in 30 days or 60 days, you know. By that time, the customer get the goods out of customs and can do whatever they want, right? So this is the typical international sale problem. Now, what we've done with some clients is that actually our company contracts directly with the supplier. We're sort of a middleman, if you want. I hate that word. But obviously, everything is done in transparency. Everybody knows, you know, who's the other party, and we don't add extra fees or whatever. But still, we get paid by the customer, and then we pay the supplier. But the difference is we are a local domestic company, right? We have several subsidiaries in China with relatively high capital and so on. It does provide a certain reassurance to the Chinese supplier. You know, they can sue us. If we don't pay them, they can sue us. They can go after us, right? We're over there on the ground. They can come and visit us anytime because, hey, you know, that's the facility. You know, they have an office in their tower in downtown, or they also have a warehousing and packing facility there in the free trade zone, and they have that other bigger facility there in Dongguan and so on. They know that they can come after us, which means actually it's not that hard to push them for different credit terms. You know, payment at the end of the month after shipment, for example, is relatively common. So by doing this, it's often possible to get a little bit of, you know, nicer payment terms, right? Obviously, it usually doesn't make sense to do that just for the payments, but, you know, as an extra benefit in addition to some other services where we create value, it's as a total package. There's a lot of things we can do to create value for some clients some of the time, right? So that's, you know, to answer your question about the suppliers, a lot of things actually can be done to manage suppliers better and make things easier for them and, you know, provide some extra reassurance that, you know, this is a good customer long-term and you need to do this to keep them and, you know, they're not there to play games with you and everything. There's a lot of things can be done, obviously, right? A lot of communication. Sure. It's really comes down to, you know, maybe 70-80% of it is really coming down to communication, open and clear communication on the ground, you know, face-to-face is always better, which is sort of a challenge these days, obviously. So there's some other things. Obviously, there's sort of an endless array of possibilities there. Once you have a facility in the free trade zone, You can receive products from several suppliers in China, and maybe one of the components might come from, say, Vietnam, and kit it all together or do some light assembly there, and you know, repack everything there, ship it out. There might be different sorts of benefits for different situations. For example, a customer that wants to maybe keep his suppliers in the dark might not want the supplier to know, hey, here's the pricing label and here's the labels and all the branding of the distributor, the retailer, you know, so that the supplier actually knows everything at the end, right? So mm-hmm. Some people like to keep these very last operations sort of for the last minute, and then they bring the product to another facility where some stickers are slapped on the cartons and things like that. You know, some extra stickers or hang tags are added on the products, and it's good to go, right? Simply, yeah, as I said, sometimes one or two of the components have to come from abroad. And, you know, does it make sense to go to get it through the Chinese customs and go through the hassle of doing all of that? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes it's, you know, combined with some other benefits that I mentioned, it might make more sense to just do this in a facility like ours, where in addition we can, you know, keep the products in a warehouse, ship them whenever the customer wants, hide certain things from the suppliers, you know, do things behind closed doors. So it's really on a case by case basis. I don't want to be like hot selling any services here, but
sure.
You know, to give an idea about sort of benefits.
You mentioned customs clearance. What's the difference can you see between the sort of expedited customs clearance to bring things in and out of the free trade zone and the regular Chinese customs clearance?
Well, you know, you have, let's say, the full import and export process, right? And the free trade zone is like a bubble where, you know, the goods, once they can go from the outside of China into that bubble and out of that bubble, sort of without going through that food process. Much simpler. But then, of course, when it has to go from that bubble into China, or from somewhere in China into that bubble, you have to go through the normal food process, basically, right? And I'm not sure, we have a couple of very good ladies who take care of these declarations. I don't know all the little details about that, but it's okay. It's much more straightforward.
Okay, so the free trade zone seems to me to be almost another option that helps replace the need for Hong Kong companies. Would you agree with that?
Well, there's a lot of warehousing space still in Hong Kong. It's like a free port, right? Things go in, go out, pretty much no duties on a lot of product categories. However, the price of warehousing in Hong Kong is many times that of Shenzhen. It's like there's no comparison. The labor pool is quite different. It's also more expensive to have people do that kind of work. Much more expensive, actually. It's actually more expensive than an office person, you know, a regular office person in Hong Kong. When you look at the salaries for working in a warehouse, for driving a bus or a truck, for just, you know, managing a small 7-Eleven, you're talking 20 to 25,000 Hong Kong dollars, which is, I don't know, 16 to 20,000 RMB or something. It's much more, right? So altogether, it's much more money. So does the Shenzhen Free Trade Zone actually eat into some of the work of Hong Kong? Probably a little bit, but there's still so much stuff in Hong Kong. I admit I haven't looked at that in, you know, from all angles. It appears to me, yes, it would eat into some of the work that could be done in Hong Kong, that was done in Hong Kong 20 years ago. When you think about it, for example, for just warehousing and doing fulfillment, it could be done exactly the same way in Hong Kong, that's for sure. You know, you export, you keep it in Hong Kong, if it's made in South China, and then you export from Hong Kong, but the costs are much higher. If you do repairing, of course, you can get the goods back to Hong Kong, but then it's much harder to get the operators into Hong Kong to do the work. And by the way, these days, it's not just much harder. It's impossible because the border is closed. Right. I mean, it's not exactly closed, but you're not going to get, you know, 20 operators across the border to do this and just come back. It doesn't happen this way these days. So, however, has it eaten a lot into Hong Kong business? I'm not sure. I don't know. I have to say.
Okay. I guess the jury's out on that. So to sort of summarize, if importers are receiving bad products from a Chinese supplier, being able to send them back into a free trade zone such as the one in Shenzhen is quite beneficial because they're avoiding a lot of import-export duties that they'd normally have to pay to get them back to Chinese suppliers elsewhere. And if you've already had bad products, effectively, it's going to be a disaster, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is a disaster anyway.
Right.
This is a way to mitigate it, let's say. You have a risk, the disaster falls onto you. You at least there's something you can do. You're going to waste, you know, maybe 2.5 months and all kinds of, you're going to have all kinds of problems, but at least there's something you can do. Not just going to drive it, you know, to a dump and throw it away, right?
Right. Okay. So worst case scenario, this at least gives you a better option than before. I mean, we have spent a lot of time talking about vetting suppliers and making sure that you're in a position where these disasters don't occur in other right. podcast episodes, of course. So, I mean, there's definitely something to think about. But some really interesting information about the free trade zone there. If listeners want to learn more about this particular free trade zone, where is it exactly in Shenzhen? Because you mentioned Chenhai, which is in the west, but this one is in the east, right?
Yeah, it's in Pingshan. Frankly, I don't know if there's much information on the internet about that. I type in Google Pingshan, you know. Shenzhen Pingshan, there's not much going on. There's a railway station. there's not much on the internet about that.
But it is there. The fact that the benefits you've mentioned, they do exist.
Oh, it is. Yes.
Okay. I'll try and find it on a map and add the link to it so it's possible to actually see where you're talking about. And you know, the proximity to the Yantian port is important because, of course, a lot of the containers are coming out of there from Shenzhen, aren't they?
Yes. Basically, it's just north of the Yantian, the big Yantian port. A little bit northeast, slightly. Yeah, it's really not that far away. Once you're there, it's sort of it's an easy link, easy ride.
All right, lovely. Well, thanks for catching us up on the Shenzhen Free Trade Zone and its different benefits. That's really interesting.
Great. All right. It was good talking to you. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.